Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios, a joint effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and the FAA Safety Team, the FAST Team. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Amy Loboda, editor of Aviation for Women magazine and FAST Team representative, Fort Myers, Florida, who is today's host.
Welcome to FAA's Managing Safety. This is Amy Loboda here in Sebring, Florida today with Phil Lockwood, the owner of Lockwood Aviation. But there's much more to the Lockwood Enterprises here on Sebring Airport than just Lockwood Aviation. Isn't that true, Phil?
Yes. Good morning, Amy. Yeah. Yes, we have several different companies. Lockwood Aviation Supply is our company that handles the Rotax engines, all of the parts for the engines, and all related accessories for Rotax-powered aircraft, like wheels, brakes, tires, engine instruments, flight instruments, strobes, that sort of thing. And then we have a company called Lockwood Aviation Repair, which actually handles the service of the Rotax aircraft engines and the airframes in which they're installed. So all those different airframes come in for service, especially now the new light sport, special light sport aircraft. In the past, you know, we did a lot of phone tech support for our customers that were mostly experimental aircraft owners and did the work themselves. But that's changed quite a bit in the last couple of years as special light sport aircraft have become more popular. And of course the rules require certain levels of training. You have to either be a LSRM or a AMP mechanic to work on the special light sports.
So you actually train people to work on LSAs?
Sure. We developed a company called Aerotechnical Institute, and that company specializes just in training Rotax mechanics. We actually offer three different courses, a two-day service school, two-day maintenance school, and then a two-day heavy maintenance school.
Wow, heavy maintenance. When you talk about heavy maintenance, what are we talking about? Actually changing out engines, or?
Heavy maintenance would involve overhauling components. The next level beyond that is actually overhaul.
Okay.
That's something right now we're the only shop in the U.S. that's authorized to do overhauls.
On Rotax.
Yeah, and that requires a significant amount of training and experience and equipment. There's another shop up in Canada, Rotec, that does overhauls as well. I think the first two courses are the most popular, the service and the maintenance. Service is pretty much, as the title describes it, it's basic service. Maintenance allows you to actually remove components, major components, and send them to a shop like ours for overhaul. And that really gets most mechanics 95% of what they'll ever need to take care of all the Rotax engines with the help of companies like ours that can actually support them and do that overhaul work and then turn the components around quickly. In 4 days, a mechanic can be pretty well on his way to really understanding the engines. And then there's a two-stroke school as well.
Tell me about that.
Two-stroke engines. It's a two-day school, which is also dedicated towards just training people on the two-stroke overhaul and repair. The two-strokes are simpler than the four-stroke engines, and so that course is, there isn't as much involved, and it's just a one course.
Okay, excellent. You sell a lot of two-strokes still.
Not as many as in the past. We do sell two-strokes, but the business has moved dramatically towards the four-strokes.
All right.
I think market concerns, environmental concerns, everything seems to be moving towards the two-strokes. And, you know, with the new special light sports being larger and faster, and they're better suited to the four-stroke engines.
Okay, but you do have some Part 103 ultralight even that still come here for their Rotax servicing.
Sure,
on the
sure.
Light.
Sure, we have a few
strokes.
Of those. And I mean, there are thousands and thousands of two-strokes out there flying and operating. Of course, we support them and sell them parts and do two-stroke overhauls.
Excellent. Yeah, I used to have one of your two-strokes for many years.
Sure, the 503 and the 582 in particular have been very popular. They'll be around for quite some time. It's just we have noticed a shift from the two strokes being the dominant sales engine to now the four strokes being the dominant sales engine. So definitely a shift over that in that direction.
Now, do you do flight training here as well?
Absolutely. We have a flight school. Lockwood Aviation is the name of the flight school. And there again, we specialize in training people to fly Rotax-powered aircraft. And we do have a Cessna 172, and we do commercial and instrument work. But we have two special light sport aircraft that we train in. And we have people come from all over the country to learn. We have excellent instructors. And I really like the flight school in that it helps keep me in touch with what a flight school needs, what kind of demands they have on the engines and the equipment and for service. And so with our own flight school needing 100-hour inspections and needing quick turnaround on service, we get to see what that's like. Also, we've been able to do some testing for Shell with their new oil Sport Plus 4-stroke oil. Of course, the oil we know works very well, but what we've been doing is we've been running 100-hour oil change intervals in the flight school environment, and they've actually been testing the oil to see how it's holding up. And we'll take one of our engines right to TBO with those. Now, of course, we're using unleaded fuel, which is the only way we can go 100 hours with that special oil. And it requires a certain kind of oil, either a full synthetic or a specially engineered semi like the AeroShell product.
Okay. And when you say unleaded fuel, you're not talking about 100 low lead.
100 low lead has a lot of lead, of course. Yeah. Has about 18 times as much lead as the leaded automobile gas had back in the 60s. So although it's called low lead, it actually has a lot of lead. It's low lead compared to the old green aviation fuel, which had massive amounts of lead. But in the world of modern aircraft engines like the Rotax, we don't need that lead. Now, we can operate on it. A lot of our customers operate exclusively on 100LL, but we don't need it. And the lead does have some negative aspects to it in that it will contaminate the oil.
So where are you getting your unleaded fuel from?
Well, we could get it from local gas stations. That wouldn't be convenient. We put a 500-gallon skid tank right on the ramp, and we have it brought in from a local company.
Can you assure that what the percentage of ethanol is in it?
Well, Rotax has approved auto gas with up to 10%. Now, it used to be 5%. They've upped that to 10%. And our experience has been that the engine will run fine on gasoline with up to 10% ethanol.
So up to 10% ethanol works. We don't really know beyond that, though, correct?
Well, we don't, but we do have customers in South America and Brazil in particular that are operating on up to 25% ethanol.
Wow, up to 25%.
Yeah, our sources there are telling us that the engines with stock carburation, stock setup, are operating on that fuel. Now, I'm not recommending that anyone try that.
No, sir.
But the fact that they're able to operate on 25% ethanol with a stock engine tells us that we should be able to operate on 10% without any trouble. And in fact, we have been. The biggest problems are with the fuel tanks and the fuel lines. A lot of the fuel tanks can't take the ethanol, particularly some of the composite tanks that work just fine with straight gasoline or avgas. You put the ethanol in there and it starts to attack the... And that can then cause problems with the engine because you get these chemicals coming out of the tank, and then they coat the jets in the carburetor or the valves or valve stem guides or other, and all of a sudden you have engine problems. So, the alcohol can cause those problems, but it's not the engine. It's a result
of the components.
Things coming out of the fuel system as a result of it.
So you need to prep your LSA or prep your experimental properly if you think you're going to have to operate it in that manner?
Yes, you need to know if you're going to do that, you need to make sure that your aircraft is ready for it. Now, for example, the AirCam has aluminum fuel tanks.
Yes.
And we use the, it's either the ProSeal or PRC sealant.
Mm-hmm.
And that sealant is not affected by the 10% ethanol. So, you know, that is a combination that we found works very well. An aluminum tank with the PRC sealant on the seams, and you're good to go. You know, if you're using that in combination with a fuel line which is not attacked by the ethanol, then you're in great shape. And in the case of the air cams, that's the way it's been. They haven't had any problems. You know, some other aircraft, you know, these clear fuel lines that especially the ultralights use for years, even using the best of the inexpensive clear fuel lines, they don't hold up with the alcohol. I mean, the most you can expect is a year. Sometimes in 6 months, they're coming apart. So, you know, that's kind of changing the way we look at using that fuel line. And we're really pushing our customers to move towards the more expensive, you know, $4 a foot, you know, or five, you know, or more like AeroQuip type line.
There you go. There you go. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Phil Lockwood with FAA's Managing Safety.
Now, let's rejoin Amy Lavoda and Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios.
Welcome back. This is Amy Lavoda, your host of FAA's Managing Safety today. We are here in Sebring, Florida, with Phil Lockwood of Lockwood Aviation, who's been telling us about the various and sundry different things that Lockwood Aviation and the repair shop, the flight school, the mechanics school now for LSA mechanics. One of the things I wanted to talk with you about today, Phil, is the upcoming presentation you're going to do January 2nd. Could you tell us where and what you're going to talk about?
Sure. That'll be at the FAA Safety Center, which is located at the Sun and Fun facility on the Lakeland Airport.
In Lakeland, Florida. Great.
Right. And I'll be up there. I believe I'm on at 11 o'clock. They like to put me on. They used to put me on just after lunch, and I'd have to deal with everybody falling asleep after they had a nice lunch there.
So I think you this
year they took mercy on me and gave me the 11 o'clock spot. But I'll be talking about the new oils. Now, Pennzoil has kind of been superseded by the company that bought them, Aeroshell, in the two-stroke market.
Very interesting.
We relied on Pennzoil, who for years supplied us with a very good product for the two-stroke Rotax aircraft engines, and were kind enough to guarantee us that they wouldn't change the formulation without telling us or testing it. And they did several times and retested it and came up with a good replacement. But I'll be talking about that, and they have just come up now, Shell has come up with a new two-stroke oil just for the two-stroke aircraft engines, and particularly tested on the Rotax. And we were heavily involved with that with them, and it's very impressive that they've gone to that length. And, you know, it makes them, you know, the only company that can really say they make a specialized aviation oil for all aircraft engines.
There you go. That's a big deal.
We'll talk about the four-stroke oils and what we found out about them and how they're affected by avgas and autogas, which ones to use with different types of fuel. So that's always, people find that information interesting. We'll talk about all the new changes that are coming about with the Rotax 9 Series engines. There are some very significant changes coming about for the 2010 model year on that engine. And we'll talk about some of the other changes that have taken place over the last couple of years.
This is going to be a very educational session. Now, if for some reason they miss you on January 2nd, when is the U.S. Light Sport Expo going to be here on Sebring's Field?
That is in January, and I don't have the...
Is it around the 16th or so?
I think it is. I don't have the date committed to memory.
Okay.
But I will be talking there on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Okay, about similar topics?
Yeah, it'll be there'll be similar information. Of course, I update the talk as information comes out, and so even a couple of weeks there'll be some changes. But similar information if they miss the one in Lakeland.
And then finally, if they aren't coming south until April, they could catch you at Sun and Fun at Lakeland's Linder Field.
That's right. Yeah, I'll be on in the same FAA building during the Sun and Fun Air Show. I believe I'm on Sunday this year.
Okay.
I'll be there, and again, I'll be going over all the latest information on the engines and service and fuels and different oils that are available, and that's just an always changing topic.
Yeah, and we were speaking about earlier before the break, the AirCam. Now, we didn't mention to start out with that you guys actually manufacture the AirCams here. Is that correct?
We do. That's an aircraft that I actually designed back in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And I sold my interest in that company around 2000 and then bought the company back 2 years ago. And we've been making significant improvements to it, updating the manuals, doing some additional engineering. We've engineered some new float mounts and engineered the rear float attachments to the fuselage, and we're working on a full enclosure.
The float seemed to be very, very popular. Now, I need to explain. The AirCam is a very unique airplane because it's a twin-engine Rotax open cockpit tandem that was built by you for you to do a National Geographic shoot over
the
very inhospitable jungles of the Congo that you didn't want to go down in, no matter what.
Right.
And that second engine is so completely redundant you can actually take off. I have witnessed it. I've been in the airplane and performed it myself. You can actually take off on one engine. So it's become very popular with the float options. I'd assume that's one of the reasons why you've been refining it.
That's right. And the reason we didn't have engineering completed for the rear float attachments, we used the landing gear as the forward
mm-hmm.
attachment, so that's done, is because I didn't really envision it as being a practical application, floats on a twin-engine airplane in the past. Most twins really don't lend themselves to float usage, because if you lose an engine, you're never going to be able to fly on one engine. And most light twins have enough trouble flying on one engine when everything's good. Hang a set of floats on them, and you're definitely going to be descending. So I thought we'd be in the same situation. And so although I knew people would put them on floats, because obviously with both engines running, it's still going to perform fantastic. I was surprised when we put the first floats on the airplane and I flew it. I was surprised at the single engine performance we were able to attain. When I got the company back 2 years ago, I started thinking, okay, we really need to address this and make sure these installations are done properly, because the performance is there and obviously people want it.
Oh, yeah, people want it. And it does help if you've got the attachments already set up so that it becomes very simple to find the sweet spot for those floats and get them aligned properly.
Sure. Well, we had a tremendous amount of engineering in the design of the airplane. All the major structure was engineered. And, we did quite a bit of static load testing and drop testing. And I used the figure of 22,000 hours, and that's about the amount of time it took to do the engineering. So the floats really add some significant loads to the aft section of the fuselage. And if you want the airplane to endure as it was meant to for thousands and thousands of hours, without any cracks or any structural fatigue, you need to do the engineering. And so that's what we've done to this aft section now. And I think we have a float package that should really be good long term.
Excellent. Excellent. That's just exciting stuff. You have been how long on the Sebring Airport now?
Well, we built this facility, the first phase of three, in 1994.
Yeah, so just about as long as our kids have been around. We've had this place here. It's
years.
Very exciting. It's very exciting. Phil, is there anything else you want to tell people? How about you tell them where your website is and a telephone number where they can get a hold of you if they're curious and they want to make sure that they can find you before these events, January 2nd, January 16th, 17th, 18th, and also in April?
Sure. Well, our number here is area code 863-655-5100. And if you happen to be using an old, not a cell phone, but a hard line, you can always dial 1-800-LA-ROTAX. Easy to remember. We have a website, Lockwood-Aircraft is the AirCam website. And then Lockwood-Aviation.com is the Lockwood Aviation website.
Terrific. Does the flight school have a website, or can they get to everything from those two basic websites?
You can hop to them. Okay. They're all linked, and they're usually easy to find if you Google them.
Phil, we are looking forward to seeing you at the FAA Production Studios on the field at Lakeland's Linder Airport in Lakeland, Florida on January 2nd. And until then, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us today here on FAA's Managing Safety.
You're very welcome. I'll look forward to being at the next seminar.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios, a joint effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and the FAA Safety Team. Please visit our studio website at faaproductionstudios.com to hear past programs.